Hello, and welcome to the Association for Positive Behavior Support, APBS, podcast. APBS is a multidisciplinary organization made up of diverse professionals such as teachers, researchers, university professors, administrators, family members, and consumers who are committed to the application of positive behavior support. The mission of the Association for Positive Behavior Support is to enhance the quality of life of people across the lifespan. We hope to achieve this by promoting evidence-based and effective positive behavior support to realize socially valid and equitable outcomes for people, families, schools, agencies, and communities. Each of our upcoming episodes will feature speakers addressing the application and practice of positive behavior support in diverse areas. We have so much to share with you, and we are glad you are here with us. Stay tuned. Welcome to Season 2 of the APBS podcast. This is Episode 7, featuring a family utilizing positive behavior support in the community. This is Muna Khalif. I'm sitting here with Tania Misjin, my co-host. Today's speakers are going to be Laura Korn, who is part of the leadership team within APBS as a board member, along with her son, Ryan Bird, who's a junior in high school. Thank you, everyone, for being here, and we look forward to your experiences and advice for families.
Okay, is everybody ready?
Yep.
Yes.
Perfect. All right. As you are well aware, the mission of APBS is to enhance the quality of life of people across the lifespan by promoting evidence-based and effective positive behavior support to realize socially valid and equitable outcomes for people, families, schools, agencies, and communities. To achieve this mission, APBS has strands across the school, home, and community. Would you share the experience of how positive behavior interventions and supports, or PBIS, has impacted your family?
Sure, I will start. I'm Laura, and I'm the proud mother of my son, Ryan. He's going to be sharing some of his experiences today. But I actually got involved with PBIS when he was diagnosed with a few disabilities, and including autism, and I really felt like I didn't know what I was doing. So I started to take some classes and found PBIS through classes and realized that it was going to play an important role in how we approach parenting. Because I had been very much like, well, let's just see how it goes, like very flexible, et cetera. And that wasn't working with a kid with autism. So what I learned was once we started to put more structure and routines and use visuals and did more like explicit teaching with him, he was doing so much better. And that was matching what they were doing in his preschool program. And then it carried forward. So that's kind of been our role, is that it really helped me feel more successful as a parent. But I think Ryan would can share a little bit more about some of the stuff we've done and what's helped him at home and school.
Yeah, some of the major things are definitely a school classroom type schedule thing, something I can look over on a day-to-day basis of what I'm doing. And as well as sometimes in the community, I enjoy Boy Scouts, but I like the structured parts of it more than unstructured time. I can get very bored very easily. And that's something, you know, something I don't want to happen. And things that help me included are like visual type maps. Sort of, I can visually point out where I'm going every day. Definitely helps. Assistive technology such as just writing type things, dictation, word processing programs, such type as that just can help me get my ideas down. And if I'm feeling overwhelmed at school, I can take a break, I can walk, go to the guidance counselor's office, and if feeling particularly bad. But I don't usually do this, but this is just one of my many sort of combinations in case the worst comes.
Thank you so much for sharing what's helped you and what has been a positive experience for both Laura, your family, and Ryan, you as the person, you know, using the supports throughout the community and school and at home. Ryan, I know that you're a junior in high school and so you have some friends there. Have you experienced anything where you've seen your friends using behavior supports or maybe had an experience with that?
I've had plenty of experience with that, especially using behavior supports and such, and sometimes being forced to use it. They may not want to use it, but they have to. I've seen plenty of kids have teachers sort of tell them, you know, which one's right, which one's wrong. And then especially I've had something which I deem rather inappropriate for what happened is one of my friends got sent away for an attitude problem due to sort of just they probably didn't know what to do with him or something. And they sent him away to a school which felt like he was more structured for people who had a harder time doing it. And he felt like he could function in normal school. And I can understand why someone might need this, but he did feel like he could function fine at school. He just had some attitude problems. Sort of like he needs to be able to, maybe it feels like they sort of like wanted to push away the problem rather than sort of address it, which is very saddening indeed.
Go ahead, Laura. Yeah.
I was going to say that was kind of eye-opening for me because we talk about all the positives of like behavior supports and all of that and all the benefits that Ryan has had. But when he came home on the van that day and was sharing that experience, he was really thrown because he always saw school as a very supportive place where they had additional supports for kids with challenges. And he kind of felt that the kid wasn't being heard, or he really didn't know. All he knew was from the kid talking in the van that he was being sent to a different school. And that was upsetting. It was interesting to see his perspective on that. And nobody ever talked about it. It's just that the needs weren't being met, so the kid goes to a different setting. But the perspective of somebody who's friends with the kid and not knowing and experiencing that was tough as a parent to see, and he's really kind of struggled with that a little bit.
Yeah, it's sort of very shocking considering it felt like they could have done a lot more. It feels like the way they sort of had this attitude about it where it was like, we can't do anything else, okay, bye. It's sort of they just threw him, it's like sort of just discarding him once they can't use the basic stuff, which, you know, for a lot of people with disabilities, they should be able to function in a normal school, be able to function in that type of setting. And by not doing that, it doesn't allow a kid to fully have a great education, because sometimes those specialized schools may not be as rigorous as a normal school and they may not get the best education. Of course, there's plenty of examples where that's the opposite, but it could happen. You want them to function in normal society. Otherwise, they might get used to it. They might get used to this sort of thing.
That's a really interesting observation, Ryan. So what I'm kind of hearing is this idea that we want to include everybody on that team, including the person receiving those supports. Is that something that you would agree with?
Yes, 100%. I feel like that if anyone's going to know what they need, it's the person receiving the thing.
Thank you so much for sharing that insight. That's a really great thing for people to understand about positive behavior supports. The practice of positive behavior supports and effective behavioral support in school, home, and community settings focuses on comprehensive outcomes in the lives of children, youth, and adults. Now that you have used PBIS in your family for over 10 years, what tips would you share with families who are using positive behavioral support?
I would say that when Ryan was younger, we did a lot to set up the environment for him to succeed. We knew that sometimes in the morning, it's hard to get ready quickly. And he wanted to be as independent as possible, or we wanted him to be independent as possible. So we would like put out his clothes, and we had things like he struggled to tie his shoes. So we just got shoes that he never had to tie his shoes, and he would just be able to do that. But I think that looking back, I think that we would have set up more opportunity for him to be independent. For example, that like shoe tying thing, when we went away on vacation and those ties broke and we went to go get to a store, the only shoes they had available were ties. Like we had to tie it. And so my husband said, wait a second, like he's like in junior high, he should be able to tie his shoes. And he taught him in like 5 minutes and he just did it. And I was like, oh my gosh. So sometimes I think that it's so important to control the environment, but you also have to remember to teach and to let your child also show some independence. So that's kind of some of the stuff that I would say is something that we learned. We were successful, but we also were doing a lot versus like letting him have the opportunity to do it himself.
And I can add on to that, certain things that people in general are going to need help with are more complex things, like stuff that they might not know how to do and they can never do. But I think a lot of things kids need to do for themselves, and realizing that you should show them at first and then allow them the opportunity to try themselves. And if they fail, that's okay. It just means you can help them out if they're really struggling, but you have to let them sort of go through the rigor of doing it. Otherwise, they don't get the full experience of knowing how to do something.
I think go ahead, Ryan. Yeah.
All right, no, you continue.
I was just going to say that's a really good perspective, both from a parent and a child, is knowing when to give that extra support and when to kind of pull back and give that person the opportunity to try it themselves and learn and move forward with their growth.
Yes. And another major thing I think that I noted that some people might not want kids to have, but is a very crucial for me, is like have someone else know the IEP who could look back at you, look it over, make sure it makes sense. Otherwise, you know, it could be, I know school districts aren't malicious at all. I know that, but sometimes, you know, there's a funding thing and they're like, you know, we could cut something off, but you want someone else to look over to make sure that your child's getting all the right resources. You know, you understand the IEP. So that way you can fight for your right to get something if the kid desperately needs it and they're not being provided for it. And I was taught how to look over my IEP, and it really helped me as it allowed me to sort of understand my rights better. Because at the age of 18, it doesn't matter how little or how much they know, they're going to be basically left alone. They'll have their parents' help, granted, but they're going to make all the major decisions. It's the same thing with, like, for example, driving a car. If you just allow your kid just to drive on the road with no practice, no training, no nothing, then they're of course not going to do well. But if you allow them to sort of slowly build up the practice, to teach them where the brake is, teach them how to maybe honk the horn properly, they're going to have a better time doing the actual thing. And it really does help with the basic understanding of the IEP.
I love that too, Ryan, that you brought that up, because I know his special ed teacher really made that part of the high school program. And I sometimes wonder if we should have been doing that earlier than high school and really start talking about disability and talking about some of the services and even accommodations, like what do you need? And from your perspective, Ryan, what helps you to succeed in the classroom? Because I sometimes think that we just kind of have a laundry list of accommodations that we put in there, but we don't ask the student, we don't check in, like what works for you? And then what can you learn how to advocate for those few things versus like a whole list of them? Like Ryan, what were some of the accommodations that you feel like has helped you in classes?
Assistive technology, definitely having like an outline for notes, outline for writing type things. There's probably more that I don't really remember because there's a lot of them that have helped me. But I think also having specialized transportation, sort of no handwriting penalty, they're getting better spelling, that type of thing. We're really helpful.
Do you remember any that like maybe were on your IEP that like you really didn't need?
I don't really remember. I probably, my teacher didn't want me to have them, but I wanted to have them.
So what did you do?
I didn't want, she said she would take them away because, you know, it had to function. Like, I'd want my notes to be sort of typed out, you know, a hard time struggling notes. They didn't want me to do that because it'd make it harder for me to transition to college or something. Even though it would be very nice to have someone type my notes for me.
Yes, but it was a good conversation, and I'm glad you had that conversation with your teacher. Yeah,
it's a lot of times you got to make sure that it's for the kid's best interest. It's a lot of times, if you give a kid the easy road or the hard road, they're going to take the easy road. It's, why not? You get the same job done no matter what. Take it. Maybe some of those kids who are more, who want to actually try it, but a lot of kids are going to take the easy road.
I really thank you for that insight into knowing your IEP and being able to advocate. I think as a former educator, that was something that I taught in my classroom, and a lot of students, it was their first exposure in sixth grade when we did that unit, learning that they even had a disability, and learning they had this document called an individualized education plan or an IEP. And then exploring that IEP and learning what we were doing at school to make sure they were successful, it really empowered students and gave them a voice at school that they could then use across their day to make sure that they were successful. And I saw a ton of students just blossom when they were given that power. And Ryan, I can hear that same sentiment from you, like you felt empowered. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely, 100%. It was very beneficial overall.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a really important thing for someone in a school setting, is to know what they can advocate for and ask for. And then, of course, if you have an IEP, those can follow you to a college setting, like you were just talking a little bit about, Brian. You can have accommodations in a college setting, but you have to know that you can ask for them.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I also think, again, like that having that communication, like if a school IEP team doesn't think that accommodation is needed, having the conversation with the student and deciding, well, maybe as a team, it's not needed, or explain why we're going to take it out or add it. That also, I think, is helpful. I'm getting that insight just from what Ryan is sharing with that. I didn't even know that example of the story he was saying, but just again, having that conversation with the student, not just here's your IEP, here's your accommodation, but how would this work for you, especially going forward in your future?
Yeah, I found that just asking for insight from the person that is benefiting from the IEP, right? It's written for that student. Giving them the option to add in what they think would be helpful always makes it a better document. It always is used better.
Yeah, really interesting. Yeah, sorry, had an insight. I didn't know that about Ryan, so I'm glad he shared, because I just learned something new about him too.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. All right, and for our last question, if you could go back 5 years, so Ryan, that would put you at around 12 years old, I'm guessing, and encourage yourself to be braver about something, what would that thing be?
I feel like I did the best I could, but I wish I was taught things sooner. Like, wish things would have happened sooner. Like being taught that just because you have a disability doesn't mean anything. The disability part of you is not really defining. That's not your main thing. Who you are is not your disability. And especially when you finally learn you have a disability, it sort of shocks you. But if it's integrated in a way where you know it over time, slowly but surely, it just becomes a part of you. And it's not like ultra defining or scary as much when you actually know what it is. Cause I only got this when my mom told me like a few years ago, and you know, then it finally set in like, oh.
Yeah. And I think we were too protective. So we didn't have the conversation about having disability really until he was transitioning to junior high, and it was coming up. Partly the special ed teacher and the team were like, well, we like to do some advocacy building, et cetera. And I'd be like, well, we haven't really had the conversation yet. And I think, I don't know from your perspective, Ryan, I think maybe sixth grade was a little bit too late because you were recognizing that there were some things you were struggling with, but you didn't understand why. And we just kind of said, well, we'll talk about it later. I don't know. What did you think about that?
I definitely think not too early. Elementary school, it's going to be, that's a bit tougher. Elementary school, definitely. Fifth grade probably be the earliest you should do. I would say sixth grade, you should definitely tell them about it.
Do you think I waited too long to have a conversation with you?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know how it would have changed because I don't know. Like, you wouldn't want to say it to me too young. That's the problem. You don't want to say it to the kid when they're too young and naive and they might spill it to their friends or something. The friends might laugh, and you don't want that to happen. You want them to realize what they are, you know? And, you know, and they can be open about it, yes, but they don't want to be teased about it, you know? They don't want to basically just walk in the line of fire and bullying.
Well, that's the other thing is that, so in general, what do you think about, how are we doing on disability awareness in the school from your perspective?
I want to be brutally honest. I feel like there should be a lot more. I feel like it's not really talked about at all. Like, I feel definitely in my eyes, in specialized classes, people know a little bit more, but not much. It feels like they should be taught what disabilities are because people still think disabilities are a bad thing. And for a lot of people, they're not. And it's just, it's brutal for people, you know, especially like me who has it, you know, I can't say anything, you know, people, you know, they might use the R slur or something else. And it gets very much more, you know, emotionally tiring having to deal with that. And you don't want to out yourself because you don't want any of the blame sort of to go onto you taking more and more. I feel like people should be more educated, you know, and I get it. Kids are kids. They do not like to listen when they're very young, especially. They're not going to listen to you. You tell them not to stick your hand in the woods, they're going to stick their hands in the woods. But it's just more of sort of that, even when they're much younger, sort of like sort of instilling that sort of thoughts in their head. And, you know, and definitely wouldn't help. No teacher backlash or parent backlash, especially just sort of be more open about what people are basically saying, this person has autism. And then explain what that is. And then explain how that doesn't really change much. And just say, he might struggle with a few things, but he's still Timmy. He's like, you know, Timmy might have a disability, but he's the same, you know, sort of just getting more recommendations, getting more sort of that visualization of disability doesn't mean bad. This could be used for many other things as well, but definitely do believe that disabilities doesn't feel like it's being talked about enough. And in fact, another funny thing, I remember Mom and I were talking about this before. We were reading my AP US history textbook. It managed to mention every subject except for disabilities. And for me, that was very shocking because this book went into gruesome detail of mentioning everything else besides disabilities. And for me, it's like, you could have added that. Like, you went through all the work effort to mention everything else. And it would be nice if you mentioned mention disabilities, you know, in that same light, because everything else was mentioned except for that one thing. And it was very hurtful. And it sort of showed the appeal of sort of the idea of disabilities, you know, people don't think about it as much.
Yeah, Ryan, that's a really interesting point you brought up about your AP, was it your AP history textbook, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, the Americans with Disabilities Act came out of the civil rights movement. And did they cover that? Sounds like they didn't.
No, they did not.
Tanya and Ryan, I think this is a good point to end our episode with, that the ADA is a broad law that provides civil rights protection to all individuals with disabilities in the U.S. in many different aspects of life. Title II of the ADA prohibits discrimination by state, local governments, which includes public schools. So if schools are not being inclusive of disability justice, disability rights in the civil rights section of or studies, that definitely needs to be brought to the attention of leaders in schools. This brings us to the end of our episode. We appreciate you taking the time to learn more about the Association for Positive Behavior Support. Upcoming podcasts will feature diverse professionals, families, community members, continuing to discuss topics focused on enhancing the quality of life of people across the lifespan by promoting evidence-based positive behavior support. You can find details for upcoming podcasts, conferences, webinars, and much more at our website, apbs.org. You can also follow and contact us on our social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We encourage everyone listening to visit apbs.org to learn more about membership opportunities and to be notified of upcoming episodes. Thank you.